It's Reginald Thomas, yeah. Reel 2. You mentioned that you were a cadet officer at Woolwich. Were you there at the same time as Alan Brooke and Philip Neame?
Yes, they were cadets when I was an officer at the shop. Mm-hmm.
Did you know them very well?
Neame, I got to know very well, because Neame was, I didn't know him very well at the shop, because he wasn't in the batch I had to look after, and nor was Alan Brooke. But I knew Alan Brooke. I think Alan Brooke was a chief staff officer, a chief, what do they call it?
Of the Imperial General Staff.
No, the cadet.
Sorry.
The head cadet, yes. You know, one of the... They had under-officers and corporals, the whole of the senior term, even in my day. And I was a shop officer for 5 years there in Sandhurst afterwards. What am I saying now?
About Alan Brooke and Philip Neame.
Yes. I only knew Alan Brooke as, I think he was, I'm not sure whether he was chief under officer or whether he was one of the under officers. But anyhow, he was one of the heads of his term. Philip Neame, I got to know afterwards because... he was a sapper. You know, in passing out of Woolwich, the first 14 or 15 or so on, the number of sappers they wanted, had the choice of being sappers instead of gunners. And Philip Neame was a sapper. And he was stationed in the First World War. He was one of the engineers of the brigade that I was a gunner in, and I got to know him very well there. And we were in the... this is a little bit of history, possibly. The trenches, our trenches, and the Germans, we'd each advanced so far that both of us... without any written orders, except from our chiefs, we both stayed put. And this was... drawn up along the... just in front of the what was called the Aubert's Ridge. I don't know whether you know that. You probably don't. And the Germans were about the same distance the other side of it, you know. And now we could... we were terribly short of what we wanted for hand grenades, and we hadn't gotten there. And... I don't think they've invented it because they were very old things that were reinvented. And with Philip Neame's aide, the sapper, and I was gonna field artillery, we concocted the jam tin bomb. Then we heard that other people in different parts of the line had done it, so I can't claim any, except that we were original so far as our little section goes. We hadn't heard of it. And we did this simply because we had to do something, because we got no hand grenades to hurl at the... And we were so close, you couldn't get... Occasionally got pot shots, you know. But to get something into the trench was a very different thing. And so... I helped Neame to run this little factory he was doing with empty jam tins. Mm-hmm. And I made one or two excursions behind our lines into our Montier and that to buy ingredients. What do you want? Yes. I was able to find a shop that dealt with explosives, and we got some gun cotton. Mm-hmm. And we made little slabs of this too, and blasting detonators. That was what we wanted very badly, and I got a lot of those too, and brought them back, and we made hand grenades out of jam tin bombs, and turned them into jam tin bombs. That's to say, we got our farriers, and I was still in the mounted section, to cut up horseshoes, old horseshoes and bits of iron, you know, told them what we wanted. These were to make missiles. And so we had a bit of gun cotton down that, or any high explosives you could get, and put a detonator in that with a bit of safety fuse, you see, and you'd say one might go off after 5 seconds or 10 seconds, whatever you wanted. And we just hurled these things into the German trenches, you see, and they were very successful. That we went on doing this for quite a time. And so our farriers used to chop up the old bits of iron, and especially old horseshoes and things like that, because they were, you see, we'd only got to, they were lengths of tin iron. And but we weren't the only people, but we were quite an independent inventors of just what you got, and everybody else who could, I suppose, felt the same. And we called them the jam tin bombs. And strangely enough, we reported, I suppose I must have done through the Home Office and told them what I was doing, but it was, came from them. And but no doubt other people did the same thing. But the War Office of the government, they supplied us with bombs, and they were exactly the same shape as the jam tin. But afterwards they made proper hand grenades, you know. But it's rather funny. But the jam tin was a very handy thing, because you could hold it like this, you see, and it was a nice weight, and you could hurl it,
yes,
20 or 30 yards and drop it into their trenches. You couldn't have had a nicer missile to hurl. But that was, I tell you, with Philip Neame, the sapper, and ourselves, we invented that bomb,
yes,
in our little bit of zone, because I've no doubt Neame said, now what do you want is this, that, and the other. And
this wasn't the only improvisation you had to undertake, was it? That you also had the battery that you took to France was 4.7 naval guns.
Yes.
And the shells didn't fit the bore properly, did they?
That's what I'd rather forgotten that. But I don't know. I think that must have been only in a batch of shells we were short of. I do remember adjustments to the driving band, it was called, you know, the copper band that goes around the bottom of the shell to act as it takes the grooves. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the shell just misses the grooves. And I do remember that. But I can't remember the wrapping wire around it.
Mm-hmm. And you also had to reduce the propellant charge.
Yes, I can remember doing that. Yes.
How did you do that?
Just pulling out some sticks of cordite. Mm. Because, you've seen the cordite.
Yes.
I have no doubt. The sticks are a different diameter, mm-hmm, then different lengths for the cartridge. What you have, the cartridge consists of that, and at the back of it is the lighter of the cordite, you see, the primer, and a detonator. When you press the trigger, sometimes it's that way, the simplest way, and that lights the powder charge, which lights all the cordite sticks, you see, and that, because the cordite is slow burning, and comparatively, when I say slow burning, you know, it takes a second perhaps instead of going off instantaneously, and it sets a light to the cordite, and the cordite is a like a gunpowder propellant, and pushes the shell out, of course, and the shell takes the grooves, and away she goes. And then you have a sensitive fuse in the nose of the shell, or else you have, like we had it firing at, we were telling you something about the chimney we brought down.
Yes, you were firing at an observation chimney. Yes. You were restricted to a very few number of shells a day, were you?
Oh, Lord. A week. And I remember when we brought the chimney down, it was seven rounds for the week. Literally, that was true. We were reduced to that state.
How did you bring the chimney down?
Well, now, this chimney was a darn nuisance to the infantry, because it was between our lines, and the field artillery had several times used up their ammunition in trying to bring this thing down. For one thing, their shell were too small, and for the other thing, they weren't as accurate, I suppose. I don't want to disparage, but see, with us, you only had a certain number of rounds for the whole week, and you had to be terribly careful of how you use them. And when you fired in order to get the proper range and everything, you had to use the absolute minimum, to expend a minimum number, that before you fired the real thing, in order to know exactly how to lay and to bring the thing down. So altogether, and also, we had to, the army, the war office, in providing ammunition, they had to use what they got. They, you know, it was so scarce. And I think, as David said, the 4.7 gun was really a naval gun, and it was put on a very well invented land carriage with a limber, you see, and a trail, and a trail you lifted up and put on a hook in the limber, and you had the four-wheeled vehicle, just like the field artillery. They did the same thing for these. They called us medium. There was siege, medium and field. And we were sort of medium field, medium heavy, that meant. I was very glad to have this 4.7 battery, because the gun was turned out to be a very accurate shooter. Do you know what I mean? There in it. So we had this battery. And we were reduced, I remember at the time, we were reduced to this 7 rounds a week of shell. So you had to be jolly careful how you use them. And now I've finished this place. What was it called? Oh, Bizet, yes. There were 2 Bizets and a river, Lys, I think it was. And there was Bizet France and Bizet Belge, the 2 Bizets. And there was this chimney. It was a mill. I can't remember quite what sort of. It wasn't paper, I think it was linen. Anyhow, that doesn't matter. Anyhow, it was a factory chimney that the Germans were using as an observation post, and our trenches were in such a position that they could see right down, and it was causing a great annoyance to them. So I got permission to spend my ammunition in trying to get this chimney down, because we had this 4.7-inch gun, and it's a good, I forgot.